Okay, wow. I was emailed by an amazing leader who asked the following haymaker of a question. Are the tasks we are asked to do, and perhaps more importantly, assigned, motivating compliant or engaged mindsets? Let me ask it to you one more time. This is what was emailed to me by a leader. Are the tasks that we are asked to do, and perhaps more importantly, assigned, motivating compliant or engaged mindsets? No one said this was going to be easy, folks. So let's dive right into it and not leave anything out. My name is Joe Colussi, and I'm your host of the Traveling Principal Podcast. And for all my fellow educators and educational leaders out there listening, buckle up, because this one's going to walk the line from beginning to end. This show is intended to educate, push boundaries, and make transparent what is vague and opaque in education. And I'm actually a little stressed about this show, so let's get right into it. So to begin, let's define compliance in an educational context. Following rules, guidelines, and expectations with minimal personal investment. More specifically, yet not limited to the following examples, and this is not a fun sounding list. Okay, I'm going to read for this list here. Standardized testing, safety regulations, discipline policies, attendance policies, health policies. How about FERPA, Family Education Rights and Privacy Act? How about SPED? Oh my gosh, special education, civil rights and non-discrimination policies. And who could forget our friend, school governments, and everybody has the financial policies that they have to adhere to. So both of those last two, like, you know, you're just not a functioning system without them. So no, this is not a fun list at all. But ask yourself this, which of the above could we do without? Not which one can we influence and maybe update or make more relevant and purposeful. Which one can you do without? Right? Run down that list really quickly. Standardized testing, safety regulations, discipline policies, attendance policies, health policies, FERPA, special education, civil rights and non-discrimination, school governance, finances. I know some of you would want to talk about the testing one, and I love it. I love that conversation. But in fact, we have them in place because we've already learned the hard way. As a leader, if I didn't need to keep a minimum reserve of at least 3 to 5% of my budget, I would have given it away every year. That was the difference, albeit small, but another 3.5% for my staff or building or whatever would have made the difference. But to be compliant, I kept it. SPED compliance, perhaps the winner with the most layers of the onion when considering all the rules and regulations. But imagine what schools were doing prior. Man, I still see it. I still see some doing it. And I'm all, you guys gotta go. From hiding the students in the back, not meeting needs dictated to IEPs at all, to outright physical and mental abuse, neglect, it's still going on in some places. Now, we hinted towards a key point here. Of all that were mentioned, all of us would love to influence a modification to those policies to make our lives easier or what we do more purposeful. And that is the derivative of the question asked. It is crucial for educators and leaders to know two things. You have no choice but to follow along and be compliant. And number two, you cannot get too wrapped up in what being compliant means. You do this by defining engagement. Haha! Does this mean that they're opposites? No. You can have engagement due to compliance. A SPED student will definitely show improvements with properly assigned modifications in place due to compliance. All students will have access, increasing engagements for those who may need it most. Most attendance policies, as we leaders have to follow, require some cases massive time and efforts as well as therefore budget to go into it just to get one kid to come to school. However, are they more closely aligned or more likely going in opposite directions when looking at the balance of benign complaint versus engaging in all things teaching and learning? This varies per district, per location, per leader, per history of past performance as well. Don't leave that one out. But here's why. A compliant district would have an attendance clerk make the phone calls and document in the SIS the history of outreach, eventually sending warning letters dated and filed regarding to the current attendance situation, right? From there, a meeting is held, support team, including teachers, mentors identified from school, family, and the student to redirect. If there are like, if there's no avail, then we go to a SARB meeting where a district attorney is present in addition to an attendance clerk, administration, and family. This process also takes place over 30 to 90 days when documented correctly. The amount of time and energy that goes into this while not showing effective results could be a root of the question. Because what if we called that kid in on day 10 and being absent for a mandatory meeting meant that that's what we did, and we asked them, what do you want to learn in school? Because when I did that, the answer was amazing. And it meant we needed to be compliant and follow the law by checking boxes, but convincing my staff that this was a better option didn't take much, especially when results changed and that kid started coming in regularly simply because of a curriculum change, schedule change, and we were able to figure out a way to meet this kid's needs. The biggest hurdle of compliance is state assessments. So the biggest hurdle of compliance, I feel like, is state assessments, right? So if we really wanted to check a huge box as to why this question was asked. During the pandemic, I repeatedly talked about how we had no boundaries and can get as creative as we needed to be because we didn't have these state assessments. However, when they put the tests back in place, everyone barked about how bad the kids were doing and how low the scores were. I read articles daily, I see it on the news, I see it all over the place. But guess what? We can't get adults to go to work either. Can't find drivers, cops, pilots, teachers, aides, carpenters, welders, you name it. I can go on and on. We were all impacted negatively. Heck, I thought I was going to die every day for over a year. Right? And that is a really gnarly statement to say on this podcast. But it's true. So yes, kids are bouncing back too. And we didn't need some Pearson sham of a test to tell us that. Teachers know better than these state assessments do. Teachers and administrators can look at compliance negatively because we then have to conduct pre-assessments in the form of ICAs and IABs and IPAs, which is all I think of when I hear those acronyms. But then we have to hand score, get training, use the digital library. Wait, don't use it. Then get trained to use the newest version of it. Then find out you were taught what a state assessment aligned curriculum dictates, and that's it, right? And so, as Kurt Vonnegut wrote, and so it goes. Could be my favorite quote. However, compliance and engagement can work together in some cases. So let's stay with testing and determine how. All right, because I just told you every example of how they do. So I know teachers who fight state assessments. They write it off. They exclaim its ridiculousness and are vocal about the waste of valuable professional development it consumes. Hard to argue. But let me ask you this. What do the results say? Perhaps it says that a low percentage of students are below average in reading and writing. Okay, now we know. Take away the negative connotation that this result has when considering higher-ups, board members, parents, colleges, reputation, etc. And you are left with raw data, raw student data. So taking those results on the CASP assessment, scoring them, and figuring out areas for student growth trends in your classes informs the process of learning. And since America and each of our higher-ups are usually concerned with only the product of these assessments. It re-adds all the jargon from above about stakeholders and how it impacts them. Instead of saying to a kid, here's where you are, here's why you are there, and here's what we are now going to do about it in my class. Right? I went to a school the other day, and they had a temperature thermometer on the wall with their mascot in the middle to denote their current status. Super cool. They wanted passing percentages on state assessment. This goal drove teachers to conduct weekly IAB-type practice to start their classes. So they weren't like actually going through the system, creating these tests, having kids logged in, making a secure browser, all that jazz. They were using them as starters. This goal made all teachers fuse literacy then into their classroom teaching practices. This goal included the need for professional development, for collaboration and student inquiry then, and for a transparent lens to be used for parents and students when seeing their current standings in classes. So sure, you're missing 7 out of 10 homeworks, but why is the question, not the result. So often we are inundated with compliance and it's preventative to our plight. But that's perhaps due to not having so much of it long ago. Massive increases to compliance now, man. And that's all coming back. And we were just figuring out what to do when we didn't have to follow very many of them. Title I states that we are to supplant and not substitute for current funds during the school year, meaning all the money can only go to certain things in many, many situations of school allocation. But knowing I couldn't meant I had to redirect. And paying for PD during the summer before the start of the school year and after the school year does add quite a bit of support to our current system in place. And I hate that this is all I can use it on, but that's all I thought of to spend it on. So when asked, are the tasks we are asked to do, and perhaps more importantly assigned, motivating compliant or engaged mindsets? If you are a school leader and your district admin calls the principals into a room and says, this is the new mandate and its deadline for filing is at the end of the school year and you have 8 months until then. Yes, they are looking at you with a compliant mindset. But guess what? This is their job. But as a school building leader, knowing you can't get around it, how can you use the parameters of said compliance factors as boundaries that can be pushed and stretched to no end, making the end result the compliance? All the while, your focus on the process of getting there is where engagement lives. Don't forget, without compliance and regulations, I would have stolen all the money in my last school's budget and moved to Tahiti because no one would have told me otherwise. I mean, a bit of an exaggeration, but charter schools have had a terrible reputation for two reasons. One, educators were not the original leaders of charters. And two, lack of oversight in private charter schools led to massive corruption of school funding. So to conclude, your major role as a leader of schools boils down to safety, which we are guided by compliance and accountability, student performance, which again, guided by compliance and accountability, and school climate and culture, which is also heavily guided by compliance. So your major tasks when leading are all governed by regulations. However, now that you know that they are, how are we as leaders going to focus on maximizing the engagement and focusing on the process of learning for teachers and students regardless? You know your boundaries. Here's an example, okay? Those that rolled out the Common Core State Standards in New York back in the early 2000s when they came out did it in two ways. The first, New York City Public Schools had Willard Daggett come and explain how the Common Core State Standards were created and therefore showing the need for them. I was there. We all saw the relevance and the work to transition seemed like time well spent. There was a massive study. They went to so many different schools, determined trends. The stakeholder group was massive. The kid group was span the spectrum from K to 12, every demographic. I mean, such a smart way to do it. But the second way that the Common Core state standards were rolled out was to the remainder of New York State. New York State is made of New York City, which is a small little part on the bottom, and then the majority of the rest of the state got it in a different way. New York State public schools. They did not pay top dollar to have one of the creators of the standards come and explain why. And so it was looked at as another massive change forced on everyone to uproot what they've been doing, and everyone down to the parents hated it. I saw the relevance. You will never convince me otherwise, and I go toe-to-toe with parents who don't understand it at all and change their minds each time. It's a mindset, really, you know? Don't get it twisted. We didn't want to do the work, but we were shown why we should. And this made the process of learning seem like it would be more impactful. We created goals and timelines, and staff were not thrilled, but were on board. You will not tell me that working in one of the most violent schools in New York City at this time was an easier transition than your situation at your site. We had little to no resources, already some of the lowest scores in the state, and a union that was preventative more than guiding, and yet we prevailed. Why? Because positions in the higher-ups, in those offices at the district, they are there to monitor compliance. CFO, CAO, most C-levels, and all directors have a task that guides their job description, and compliance measures this. They are to motivate leaders who motivate staff, who motivate students. This is an extremely fragile domino sequence that rarely falls in line smoothly, because if our only focus is the product, the end result, we skip the need to alter our process within the line and just see that end result. You cannot run a system without compliance, to the point where positions in very high up places are created just to monitor them. You can always redefine engagement when your school purpose is valid, and when your purpose is the process, then that's the most valid lens out. Let me say that again. You can always redefine engagement when your purpose is valid, and when your purpose is the process, that's the most valid lens out. We danced with the devil in the pale moonlight, as the Joker once said, and I hope this was as motivating as it was truthful. So I'll leave you with this. Of all the leaders I know, the one that asked this question is perhaps of the most capable that I have come across. And once they allow this notion to sink in, they then can use compliance to their advantage and make it a part of a driving force. It unites us on a path to be in compliance, and this common bond could define your process of successes as well as failures. Almost everyone I know has negative thoughts about compliance and the policies that we have to follow. Yet within those policies, if you can see past the handed down directives, past the higher-ups not seeing the bigger picture because they aren't with boots on the ground to day-to-day. But that's not their role. They are doing what they are supposed to do. Final point. Your superintendent, your deputy superintendent, your directors and board members, they are not in your role as a school leader. Therefore, they are not making magic happen every day. They see through their lens. If they impede your ability to find successes regarding engaging students and staff throughout that process of learning, then you could put your foot down and have like solid grounds to stand on. Should you need maybe more PD time or more support or more resources or something different entirely. And trust me, I know telling your higher-ups something they don't want to hear regarding change to a current process isn't a pleasant thing to do for a school leader. But it's way better than having them see negative results after the fact, because that gives validity to only the product making an impact and not therefore the process as well. Perhaps having that difficult conversation is harder than we know it to be, but I've had those same folks thank me after the fact because your better results from a better process makes them compliant in their jobs. This is your traveling principal, Joe Clossy, signing off saying, after almost 7 years as a leader, I've told the then deputy superintendent that they needed to step back and give me the autonomy to control the current situation at hand, which I practiced and stressed about almost the most, I guess, I've ever had in my entire career. And afterwards he said, thanks, finally. You are in control. You have this ability. You know what the end goal is, defined by the area of compliance you are focused on. So get out there and lead like only you know how to. Finding engagement within compliance is by pushing the boundaries to determine successes of a process.